Good evening, everyone. I am your host, Jason Miles, and welcome to another episode of This is Revolution Podcast. Before we get started, if you're new to the channel, please hit like, hit subscribe, and don't forget to hit the notification bell so you're alerted whenever we go live. We do have some big news here on TIR tomorrow on the Pascal Robert hosted Mau Mau Hour. He will be speaking with the Green Party presidential candidate Cornel West. If you want to be a part of that live audience discussion, if you want to be able to drop a question in for Dr. Cornel West, there's only one way: become a patron for as little as $3 a month or $30 for the year. It can all be yours. Also, Patreon is letting us run a free trial. That's right. So if you want to try on the shoes before you buy them, you can do that and still be part of the live audience tomorrow or the Mau Mau Hour. Also, I'd like to send a massive shout out to all that do subscribe on YouTube, Twitch, whatever you listen to on the audio only podcast. Thank you guys so much. You are the fuel machine that keeps TIR running. Also, I want to send a shout out to Billy Bunton, who had me on his show yesterday where we discussed kayfabe documentary that hopefully will be coming out later this year. Running a campaign to raise some money to finish it up right this minute. Toussaint, could you please put that on the screen? There's a little tab where you can put the kayfabe documentary information on the screen. Also, I was a guest on Give Them an Argument with Ben Burgess, where we discussed my latest article on Insublation Media, The Grifters, the Capitalist Realism of Left Media. And some time ago, I actually did an interview with a show that I'm a big fan of. We've definitely had one of their hosts on several times on this show, Alex Hakuli from Alpha Bunga Bunga. They wrote a book that I really, really dig. You guys should go check it out, The End of the End of History. I was a guest on that show, and that is up right now. It's called Bunga Sells Out, featuring Jason Miles of TIR. So now that we got all those plugs out of the way, let's bring in the crew. Weighing in at a svelte 215 pounds, coming all the way live from Miami, Florida, he is the Pascal Robert.
Peace and greetings to the audience. Peace and greetings to the chat. Peace and greetings, Jason Miles.
How are you, brother?
Looking forward to today's show. Looking forward to the Mau Mau tomorrow. Always looking forward.
It's a busy, busy time over here at TIR Central. How did you feel when I gave you this article? You were like, what the hell is Jason sending me today?
I'm familiar with the interrogation of the Ivan Beninov theory of, you know, whiteness. I remember the piece that Cedric wrote in, I believe it was Non-Site.
Yeah,
challenging Beninov and the value of his work. And I also realized how much that school of thought has become ever present in academia, to the detriment of more materialist analysis. So I'm open to the thinking. I'm not unfamiliar with it.
Also, a fan of whiteness studies, she's the faceless voice of reason on this show. Please welcome M. Toussaint.
Hello, hello to all the Oppenheimers and all the Barbies out there.
Oh, wow. Did you go to the theater?
The Barbie movie? Did you see the Barbie movie, Toussaint?
You go shake your hair?
I actually wanted to see Oppenheimer.
But not Barbie.
But not Barbie, no.
Why is that?
I don't know. I had to put down Childish Things quite some time ago, I suppose.
Were you mad about the Jim and the Holograms movie? You're like, fuck that. You fooled me once, Hollywood.
Jim and the Holograms would be dope.
The movie was not.
They need to redo it.
We are the Misfits. We are the Misfits.
And stop giving out people's weights.
I felt like it was like a boxing ring. And I had to, you know, because I gave out your age for your birthday.
Yes, you did.
Did you get some birthday wishes?
I did. Did you get some birthday wishes? Because my birthday wish was for you to get some kayfabe donations.
We did get some kayfabe donations, and thank you very much for that. That's You just want me to give you a virtual hug, don't you? Don't you really want?
Put it in the mail.
You want me to tear up on here in front of all these white people?
Some thug tears. I'll take them.
Yes, we are over 10% of the goal. So
dope.
Chugging along. We got 3 more weeks left. I'm very excited to finish this project. Like, you don't understand. I just want to do the final editing, get it out so I can finally start screening it in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
And while I screen it, I can play that Jason Aldean song. Try to set this one up in.
Okay.
Just confuse the shit out of everybody there.
Yeah.
Speaking of Jason Aldean, the unbearable futility of whiteness is what we're here to discuss today. Whether you're a full-on white supremacist or an anti-racist, your theories around the creation of whiteness may be a bit short-sighted. Our guest this evening has something to say about people's understanding of whiteness as either the creation of evil or white people as the ones that bring mankind out of the dark ages, from his essay titled The Unbearable Futility of Whiteness. Never mind that the individual white person has exactly as much ability to affect the course of global affairs as the most wretchedly oppressed lithium miner in the Congo, or that there is no monolithic worldview or self-understanding among white people, and never has been and never could be, or that all of the behaviors and ideas often attributed to whiteness are also, of course, found in other groups. The racialists claim that there is something about whiteness that produced modernity and or the end of the world has the cause and effect backward. By treating race as a material or sometimes spiritual fact rather than an ideological construction, we miss that race isn't what produced the conditions which caused capitalism and colonialism. Rather, the conditions that caused capitalism and colonialism also produced race. In a very real way, white people did not invent colonial capitalism. Colonial capitalism invented white people. He's the co-host of the Effing Cancel Pod and writer of this very interesting piece. Please welcome, and I'm going to say your name so wrong, Jay Lusolo. So slowly.
Slowly.
Oh, what's up? Thanks for having me on.
How do you pronounce your last
name? Sorry?
How do you pronounce your last name?
Le Soleil. Le Soleil.
Le Soleil.
Jay, you came here looking thugged out as hell, man. You got the wife beater on. You were smoking a Newport in the green room.
Smoking a Newport.
You was like, I'm about to break all the white stereotypes. You and your baby mama kitchen. You just...
And then you got a last name like Le Soleil.
Yeah, last name like...
You want to do some French breakdancing or something.
Jay came in. Jay was like, I'm... Hey, what's up, fam?
No, it's nice to be on. It is really hot here, so yeah, I'm in my girlfriend respecter, and I'm also sick as fuck. I'm like really sick, so hopefully I don't like heal over in the middle of this interview.
Oh well, Jay, look, man, we really appreciate you coming on. If you're coming on sick, you playing injured, he's playing hurt. Came to the game hurt. Real talk, we really appreciate that, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I love your show.
Oh, hey, thank you. We really all dug this piece. I don't know how I found you. I know it was through Instagram somehow. And when I saw that post, I was like, oh, man, I got to get this cat on. What was the inspiration for you to write that?
Oh, man, I think... basically, the inspiration for writing that article was years now of watching people act as though there is something really special about white people, and obviously we're all used to this from racists, but it has become more and more of just like an item of faith among people who think of themselves as leftists. That there's something special about white people, and as I mentioned in the article, the racist chronology of history is that white people, through some sort of inherent essence that they have or can claim to have, were able to sort of like wrench everyone out of the dark ages and bring them to modernity, right? Mm-hmm. And that got kind of weirdly like turned on its head. And now you'll find people who are like really sincerely think of themselves as anti-racists who will say things like, you know, people of color are like closer to the earth, you know, have this sort of like inherent relationship with nature, mm-hmm. This kind of thing. And white people, there's something about them that makes them just want to sort of like ravenously consume everything in sight, and so on. And it really just, I'm sorry, I'm going to say it, recapitulates race as something real and material and essential rather than this sort of social technology that was developed at a certain point in a certain part of the world and that has parallels elsewhere in the world and at other points of history.
Do you feel living in Canada gives you a slightly different perspective? Because you're from Montreal, correct?
Yeah. Yes, it does. I mean, race doesn't operate exactly the same way here as it does in the U.S. You know, when you're not American, when you look at Americans, you're like, those people are all Americans. You know, but I think Americans tend to think of themselves as, you know, white Americans, black Americans. Obviously, that is a real thing. They're sort of like these ethnic denominations within the U.S. But it is true that living outside the U.S. makes it makes the kinds of the kind of categories that Americans think of as natural look stranger and not so obvious. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's really fascinating in that regard, Jay, is that you say that the racial categorizations that we have in the United States are more visually obscure amongst white constituencies in different parts of the world. If that's the case, why has the rise of reactionary whiteness spread to parts of the globe that we normally would not have seen it before? Where the same kind of racialized worldview we saw early on in the United States and other parts of Europe is now being spread once again. In Brazil with Bolsonaro, in Europe with the woman who's the head of Italy, with Viktor Orban in Hungary, with all of these political parties that are spouting these talks, why has racialized and balkanized discourse resurfaced outside the United States?
Well, I don't know if it ever really went away. I mean, like racist politics aren't new in Europe.
Not at all.
But they definitely have resurged in a new fashion.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a sort of like new right that is happening right now. There's like a massive resurgence in populism around the world, right-wing populism, and right-wing populism often has a racist element to it. For sure. And, you know, I'm not trying to say that people in other countries don't see the difference between sort of like different racial groups or something. I'm saying that the way that Americans see racial groups is not necessarily the way that everybody else would. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I understand.
Toussaint, you want to add something to that?
Well, sure. So in the U.S., I don't know if you have them in Canada as well. We have a group called the Proud Boys.
Hmm.
And one of the distinguishing features of the Proud Boys, they're a right-wing fascist kind of brown shirty group. They're multiracial. So the right wing, our right wing, doesn't seem to be playing by the same sort of racial games anymore. And they're integrating their ranks. I don't know if you have an equivalent in Canada. What do you make of that?
Well, I have to make an admission, which is that we unfortunately exported Gavin McGinnis to you guys.
Yes, you did.
But yeah, no, all that shit is present in Canada too, man. It's like the political ecosystems between our two countries are very intertwined. Mm-hmm. I actually did my master's degree on far-right extremism, and I weirdly happened to be an expert on far-right extremism in Canada. And when I was doing all that research, I was definitely looking into the Proud Boys. They were adjacent to what I was looking at. Mm-hmm. I was looking at the alt-right in particular, which is the sort of more overtly neo-Nazi wing of like mm-hmm. the new reactionary trend.
More Richard Spencer than Proud Boys.
Yeah, exactly. But the Proud Boys, I mean, they're definitely part of that push, right? But there's always been I guess you could say like faction or stream within fascism and within the like extreme right reactionary kind of vibe mm-hmm. That rejects like overt racism, you know. Mm-hmm. In Brazil is actually a good example of this, where there's like there's been fascist movements in Brazil that were very self-consciously like not racist, you know. Even if there was certainly some chauvinism and sort of like underlying racism present. But yeah, I mean, I think that these days throughout the West, it's no longer acceptable in like almost any segment of the population to be like very overtly racist, at least like outside of like some areas, you know. And so a lot of people, even if they do take on, even if they do have like bigoted opinions and so on, will distance themselves from racism and would happily sort of like be able to boast of their brown friend in their fucking fascist organization.
Pascal.
Well, how do you see how? So, what's interesting is that you talk about how you in academia you were studying right wing movements. How do you see the current shift of postmodernism, or the postmodern term in academia, fueling this kind of racial reductionist, racially essentialist narrative of white political history out of the perceived goal of anti-racism?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, man. The connection between postmodernism and this stuff is, I think, not always like really super clear. But I do think that they're interlinked to a certain degree. I think that like fundamentally, like postmodernism and materialism clash like to a degree. You know, like I think one of the sort of like fundamental ideas behind like a materialist view of history and of the world is that some things can be known like to some degree, you know. And postmodernism, the whole kind of push is that like everything is kind of fluid and in flux and can't really be known, and everything is just sort of like being iterated and performed and whatever, you know. Whereas I mean, materialism would say like, actually, I don't know, there are certain like historical processes that we can look at and be aware of that are in some sense true and real and actually happen. And I think a postmodern approach, when it goes far enough and kind of like percolates into enough academic disciplines, can start giving credence to these, you know, these people who can go around saying that people of color are closer to the earth or whatever, and feel like they're not being horrifically racist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's I feel like I could go deeper into that.
Go, let's go.
Oh well, fuck, man. Well, I don't know. I'm curious to know what you guys think about this. Have you seen like this kind of trend that I'm talking about?
Well, just to give it some of my personal background, I come from many years ago trafficking in many black nationalist spaces.
He was trafficking and drugs? Drugs.
In a lot of black nationalist political spaces where there is a lot of racial essentialism about white people, but is also this kind of sense of...
And about black people.
And about black people as well, but it's a kind of reverse racial superiority kind of mm-hmm. thing. You get some of that as well. And as I moved to more dialectical materialist analysis and realized the limitation of that thinking, then I really kind of started to get me to think like, you know, this stuff is really, this is kind of bankrupt also, because it's based on the similar kind of racial essentialism, but from a different perspective. But unfortunately, it's often identified as being a left project, which I have tried to argue for many years on our program, that Black nationalism is not necessarily a left project by any stretch of the imagination. But I've seen it a lot in the contemporary world of online academics who have become online communicators, whether through articles or whether through just various conversations I've had with academics about things that have become popular in the literature, and seeing that like, yeah, this stuff is this is kind of like, you know, that liberal anti-racist racial essentialism
Sure.
ADOS,
that's kind of a manifestation of that to an extent.
Hebrew Israelites,
that's definitely a religious nationalism.
And that's what you were before you came on the show.
I was not a religious nationalist.
You're going to tell us all you weren't wearing shoulder pads and dressed like African Bambaataa in 1981?
No, I was not.
Well, maybe I was, goddammit. I read this piece when you posted it, and I was pretty stoked by it. Because it reminded me of our friend, and it's his birthday today, so we want to send a big birthday shout out to Cedric Johnson.
Hell yeah.
Really? Cedric, 2019. Yeah. It's his birthday. Did you wish him a happy birthday too soon?
I didn't. Happy birthday, yeah. Cedric Johnson. Don't fellow cancer.
The Wages of Rotiger. He wrote that in 2019 in Non-Site, which definitely really, really attacks kind of whiteness studies. And I think yours is less about whiteness studies and kind of more about these clashing ideals that are both just incredibly racist.
pretty much. And also against this idea that like capitalism can be sort of like fixed if only white people stopped doing their whiteness, you know?
Yeah,
and it's like,
you know that? You haven't been listening to Wu-Tang.
I listen to Wu-Tang with the like the instrumentals now with the lyrics taken off because it lulls me,
you know. Oh, I thought you were writing because it's too black.
Oh yeah, also it's too black, yeah.
That too.
All that colored guy jibber jabber. But seriously, I found it a good piece because it is there is something to be said, and I don't know if you remember this in the 2016 primaries, I believe. Who was the super racist guy Trump had appointed to the? I think he was the attorney general.
Are you talking about Steve Bannon?
No, the other one, the one that would have like the Confederate flag in his office.
It's too American for me, man.
Hey, what'd you say, Pascal?
What, Trump didn't was an attorney general, or was it another position?
It was another position. I can't remember the guy's position.
Remember the guy, the young guy with the hair, receding hairline that went all the way back?
Not that cat. Jeff Sessions. Thank you, Dr. Claw. Sessions.
No, Jeff Sessions had been attorney general, and he kept his seat when Trump came in power.
Okay. Jeff Sessions. It was a CNN thing, and all of a sudden Jeff Sessions had told, and it was like black people sitting next to him, and he didn't care. He's like, if it wasn't for white people, you people wouldn't be here anyway. And everybody kind of stopped and looked. Do you remember that?
I remember him saying that.
Yeah, and everybody kind of stopped and looked at him, and he just didn't care. He's like, no, I'm going off on this tirade that if it wasn't for me, y'all people wouldn't even know how to read. Backward savages.
Well, if it wasn't for us, you'd be living in some kind of hayloft in the South, barefoot and walking with the dirty shoes.
Dirty shoes.
Dirty feet. Dirty feet, Jeff. So I will never forget that, because I was like, wow, that was kind of a mask off moment. And kind of to Pascal's earlier point about kind of a rise of racialized almost nationalism. It was always kind of hidden in the subtext, especially in these presidential elections, right? Super predator, you know, these were the terminologies that we used. Urban environment is a black neighborhood, right? Jeff Sessions saying, you know, you crazy savages wouldn't be shit if it wasn't for me, you know, saying that on national news is a mask off moment. And I think we've kind of been operating with this mask off, and some people have seen it as a way to actually win political power. You know, what does that say? And this is somewhat global. You know, every country is going to be a little different with these. Some countries are going to be way more nationalistic. They don't want immigrants, right? There's a very big anti-immigrant sentiment, especially in certain parts of Europe, definitely in places like France, right? What does that say about this idea around whiteness and its greatness?
That's a bit of a broad question, man.
It is.
I mean, look, like in the fucking U.S., like politicians in the U.S. say shit that you couldn't fucking say here, you know?
I don't know. The Ford guy in Toronto said some crazy shit before he
said some crazy shit. He was a mayor, you know.
Fair.
But you know, like a candidate for prime minister couldn't say something like that.
I mean, Trudeau was in blackface. When he was asked if he had a little picture, he was like, I don't know, bro. I might have more, man. There was a lot of cocaine in between.
Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, the powerful douchebags are just as evil. Don't get me wrong. It's the way that they talk about it that's different, you know. But yeah, you know, in France, like the Marine Le Pen says like all sorts of insane shit all the time. Mm-hmm. And the right wing is totally like they're poised like in like half of Europe, you know, to seize power. And it's distressing. It's fucked up. But I mean, I think that like honestly there's like an interesting thing going on, which is what I call it like the identitarian trend. Like mm-hmm. There's this movement towards identity, the politics of identity, mm-hmm. But in particular, identitarianism, which is this like hyper focus on identity, mm-hmm. as a stand-in for practically anything else, you know, and they do it on the right, and we're doing it on the left, and very few people are talking about kind of issues that affect like working people. In much of the world, the far right is currently outflanking the left on those issues, which is like really distressing, you know, when you have these like far right assholes, sometimes including people like fucking sometimes Donald Trump would be like coming out with shit where I'd be like, Jesus fucking Christ, man. You know, it's like they're like literally like outflanking like the Democrats. And it's just because he'll like and in Canada, there's like the Pierre Poilievre, who's like the conservative party guy, and he's doing the same thing. It's the same playbook, man. He'll like, because it's like he'll say the word working class, he'll say it a bunch of times, you know, and like no one else will. It's like fucking crazy how no one else will, you know. And so there's these conservative assholes who like their entire motivation is to just like cut taxes on giant corporations and sort of like make sure that the climate catastrophe continues fast as possible, but they manage to make it seem like they care about people because they're willing to talk about class and like no one fucking else will. And like people look at much of the left in like in the whole West, you know, and it's just like sort of like endless stuff about micro identities and sometimes much more important forms of identity politics too, but like often just so disconnected from like the like issues that regular people face, you know. It's, and you guys know this, but yeah, it's very often identity based issues that mostly affect like middle class and upper middle class people or very wealthy people, yeah. et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
No, I agree. And do you think that's maybe a little worse where you are?
How so?
I mean, the last time I was out there was 2019, so it's been a minute. And I had gotten warned to watch what I say before I got on the stage. Tour.
In Montreal, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
As soon as we got to the East Coast.
English Montreal is like the fucking epicenter of this shit. Like, we invented it all. It's like fucking like, it's not the worst here, man. The French Montreal is kind of different. It's funny because the city is like, it's about 60% Francophone, mm-hmm. and then like 20% Anglophone, and everybody else speaks something else. And so like English Montreal is like all these like hipsters from other fucking places in Canada who like move here to go to art school. Or they're like the remnants of like the British Empire that are still living in like big houses in Westmount. So yeah, the English Montreal sucks. French Montreal is interesting because it's like, they're kind of like behind on all this American identity politics stuff.
Word.
Yeah. They're always like 10, like around about 10 years behind on stuff. But they're much more influenced by like France, you know, and what's going on in France. So they have their own weird shit going on, but yeah, it's interesting how it's quite different in the French side. Like in the French side, they just learned that like white people aren't allowed to have dreadlocks, and like that's going on, you know, where like there's all these,
like it was nothing.
There's like all these like crust punk kids in Hochelaga who are like finding out that they're like in trouble.
Could the woke kids are like, hey man, you're appropriating Marcus's dreadlocks.
Yeah, exactly. And these guys are like, qua?
Is dreadlocks cultural appropriation?
Some people consider it that. Yeah.
Ooh, reggae performance?
Some people consider it.
People get bent out of shape about that here.
Yeah.
About white people with dreadlocks?
Yeah, yeah.
What about black people with straight hair? Because Tucson just got her hair pressed the other day. So she coming
down and just stop it.
That, wow. Is dreadlocks cultural appropriation, Pascal?
Man.
What if your dreadlocks are in a Native American headdress?
Wow.
No,
that's a lot of levels.
I used to have a mohawk made of dreadlocks, so it was kind of like best of both worlds,
made,
you know?
Of black people's dreadlocks.
Where'd you get those from?
I went down to America, I got them.
That's, yeah, I remember I had a debriefing before we crossed the border. They're like, yeah, you can't do this, you can't do that. I mean, I did it. It was fine. But yeah. It was fine. Nobody had a problem. They were over-exaggerating.
Depends who you're hanging out with, too, obviously, you know.
I won't get into that on this show, but it's a champagne room. We can deeper dive conversation into that. Pascal, I know you have some more questions for our guests.
Yes, the question I wanted to ask is, how exactly does this politics of future whiteness work on the political stage? Like, in terms of how does this create political activity within spaces that dilutes people away from really working class politics?
Hell yeah, I love that question. So I think the number one way that works is that, okay, it creates this gigantic industry among white people, where like politics is reduced to a politics of soul searching and snitching also. So it's like your job is to look deep within yourself, and do the work, and preferably like pay people to help you do the work. And so it's self-improvement, right? Self-help, right? Racial self-help. And if there are people around you who are not doing the work sufficiently, you're supposed to snitch on them and sort of like push them to do the work, by means of, you know, social pressure. And So that's happening among like white liberals, right? So there's like a whole cohort of people who are learning that basically like the whole thing that they're supposed to be doing is thinking very deeply about what bad people they are, and also maybe doing like these micro charity kind of like fundraiser things that is like all of Instagram, right? And then among a lot of people of color in the US and also in Canada, there's this idea that if only like white people would stop being so white people about everything, capitalism would kind of collapse maybe. And I think that that view is really encapsulated in the take up of the term racial capitalism by people who like don't know what that word means, you know, who are using it constantly. And what they really mean is like white people. And they believe, because they have been told, that essentially the problem with the economy is that white people just don't like other people or something and are sort of like keeping everything for themselves. And it stops everyone from being able to understand what is actually happening, how that process of capital accumulation is working, who is doing it, why they're doing it, and how they're doing it. It stops people from understanding that they are part of a class of people that is defined by its access to the means of production, right? And really encourages people to think of themselves as members of categories which, I mean, don't really exist. And it's like they exist socially, right? But as Adolf Reed is, you know, fond of pointing out, a good definition of racism is acting like race is real. And I think that people are being highly encouraged to do that by this politics, and they're being highly discouraged from anything material, anything that's not just kind of like soul searching or scolding or snitching. So it's just like a bunch of people sort of like standing in a circle, pointing fingers at each other or crying. And like nothing is happening, you know, like the people who control our entire economies are, you know, laughing all the way to the bank.
Well, as a good friend of mine once said, when we can't get justice, we settle for catharsis. So maybe there's something cathartic about seeing those white tears. Toussaint, we have a super chat. Do you want to read this?
Bill Stamper says, shit. In Florida, they're finning to teach that enslaved people gain valuable, marketable skills on the plantation.
Oof.
That's actually happening.
Yeah, I saw that the other day. That's fucked up.
You mean that the skills or?
No, it's on some old kind of like, well, listen, you know, they learned some really good plowing skills back in those days when they were picking that cotton. You know, some valuable labor transferring of knowledge was going on back in those good old days.
Padding out that resume. Just like.
Is that what you put on your resume, Toussaint? That in your DNA, you're a hard worker?
I've had centuries of internships that were unpaid. And I got a lot of experience.
That's insane.
There's a real strong attempt to diminish the horrors of slavery that is coming out of these southern states that's trying to make it seem, I don't want my white child to feel guilty. I was like, I'm not saying I want your white child to feel guilty either.
Why would they feel guilty? They weren't there. That's so weird. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Will they sign and agree? I mean, what the hell?
What do you guys think about that? Is this a backlash to kind of this, what we talked about before, this moment in academia where everything is kind of based upon identity?
I think it's a backlash to the way popular culture figures and writers weaponize that discourse in academia to create a platform for this woke horse crap that became mainstreamed and started to really turn people off. And when the administration turned from Obama to Trump, it became a tool by those same media personalities to say Trump is so racist. He's like the most racist thing we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And as that was being precipitated, a lot of people started to see through it as this kind of like a sham for fat back and biscuits. Mm. You know?
Jay?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty spot on. I think, there's certainly a reaction against the like woke kind of turn, you know. But I mean, I don't know, man. I call it like Coke and Pepsi. Like it's like the battle of Coke and Pepsi, you know. And it's kind of like they have different like colors, but it's like very much the same fucking thing in certain ways. Like where, or it's like inverted versions of each other and shit. It's the culture war, man. You know. Conservatives are always going to have some sort of like insane hallucinogenic reaction to whatever the liberals are doing, and the liberals are going to do it right back, man, and just be like, actually all children should be trans or like whatever, you know. And it's just like, it's like, okay man, these like absolute fucking crazy people are just like yammering on TV. And I think, I don't know, man, like there's definitely lots of people who are like bought into it. And a lot of other people are like, this is fucking crazy and stupid. It has nothing to do with me. So that's why I don't vote. I don't pay attention to politics, whatever, you know.
So do you think there is more nihilism in the current political state because of this?
I think it's capitalist realism, man. Like you mentioned that term in your recent article, right? But it's just this idea that there is like no alternative to the current system. So what we do is we fight over the fucking scraps, right? It's like impossible to imagine that things might be a little bit better for people, that we might not be ruled by like a psychotic fucking elite, you know? And like the only people who really talk about the possibility of not being ruled by a psychotic elite are like Marxists and the fucking QAnon people, you know, who like they just, I mean, they still want a psychotic elite. They just want their psychotic elite, right? Like that's kind of what differentiates like right wing populism from left wing populism, I would say. But yeah.
Toussaint, you have something you'd like to add to that?
I was going to pivot.
Sure.
Pivot. Okay. Hard pivot. You had talked about the spiritual dimension of whiteness and of race. So I just wanted to talk more about that. Occasionally, we mention something called Afro-pessimism here. Mm-hmm. And I think that it takes race into a spiritual dimension as well, where you will forever be black. Your soul is black. And when you die, you'll be in the black section.
Give me the black section
of heaven, which is round back.
Buses don't run on time in a black section.
They don't.
Potholes.
Cheese isn't as cheesy. It's just like really, really the rundown section of heaven. So yeah, I wanted to talk about the spiritual dimension of whiteness.
Yeah, totally. Okay, there's a couple angles. I'm trying to think which to go with. I'm going to write down one so I don't forget it. All right. So the thing I mentioned earlier about people of color being closer to the earth, I didn't just make that up, okay? It's like it's an example that I just keep coming back to because it was just so like perfect, you know? But what it was from this guy who I'm not going to name him, but he was into like a somatics practice. You guys know what somatics is?
Explain to the audience.
It's just this kind of like, it's like a therapeutic modality that is about
with the body.
Yeah, it has to do with the body. It has to do with the idea that feelings, traumatic experiences, and so on can be stored sort of physically in the body. Mm-hmm. And it's not total bullshit or anything. I think that there's like some, it's very true. You know, like people who have like a lot of like childhood trauma and stuff very often have these intense like autoimmune disorders and stuff, you know. It like literally is like your mind and your body are not like separate, right? But it gets taken to like crazy fucking places by people who have, you know, because it's unregulated, because it's not like a formal discipline yet, really. So like anybody can call themselves like a somatics practitioner, and there are these like Instagram somatics people, and one of them is on this like racialist kick, and he's not the only one. There's lots of them, but he's like of Japanese ancestry, and he's sort of talking about how like as like a person of color, as a non-white person, he in his body is closer to the earth, and there's like a spiritual element to all of this, and like there's like an understanding sort of between like him and his people and nature, you know, that like white people are cut off from in their bodies, you know. And like since this is all sort of happening in this very like it's like slipping between bodies and spirit all the time, you know. It is a very spiritual thing, right? And it's just funny, man, because it's like, you know, the guy's family is from Japan. You know, it's like they conquered like half the fucking continent of Asia in like 20 years. You know, they like industrialized as rapidly as possible and just like took over like everything and took like, you know, built like giant death camps and fucking like exterminated millions of people and shit. And it's like, you know, did they do that in spite of being closer to the earth? Did they do that because they were duped into it by like devious white people? Like what exactly was going on there, you know? And it's like, not to say that, you know, when white people do it, it's not so bad because other people also do it or something, you know. Like I say in my article, like it's a very shallow thing. I'm not trying to do that. I'm not trying to say that like it wasn't bad. It was bad, you know. Colonialism was awful. It was like extremely fucking you know, it created enormous amounts of suffering in the world. And it's going to take like centuries for us to undo some of that damage, you know. But it was part of like a comprehensible historical process, and that is the point that I'm trying to make in the article. Now the other point that I wanted to sort of like touch on briefly was that there is this spiritualist trend also within like overt white supremacism. And you know, there's writers like particularly like Julius Evola. I don't know if you know this fucking guy, but he was like a really prominent white supremacist writer, and his whole thing was very like woo-woo, like occult kind of shit. But he's like a well-respected writer in like white supremacist circles, you know. And it's this idea for him that races have a sort of like spirit, you know, and that when conditions are not right, that spirit can get sort of diluted and polluted, you know. And so you have to make sure that conditions are right for the race to prosper with its spirit or whatever. And it's just like I had to read that shit for my master's research, you know. And then like years later, I'm like looking around and like all the liberals are saying like basically the same fucking thing, but sort of just like upside down, you know. And so I'm just trying to push back on that a little bit and be like, yo, race is not fucking real. You don't have a racial spirit, you know. Like it doesn't exist. It's not a real thing. And like, I'm sorry if you believe that like your ancestors are like talking through you or whatever.
But what if the white woman that I'm dating is an empath? Doesn't that mean that somehow? No.
I can't tell you, man. I actually don't share a hive mind with your white girlfriend.
Good answer.
Jay, I refuse to believe that there's no empaths around you at all. And spiritual healers, and at least one person that has been through your doorway that does Reiki.
Oh, buddy, man. Well, one person once told me that I was spitting on the graves of 100 million murdered indigenous people because I told him that I don't believe in astrology. wow. Yeah, that's Montreal.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it's true, but that's fine.
That's I wouldn't even know how to respond to that.
I didn't response? Either, man.
I'd be like, that's all I would say.
There are Westerners who believe in astrology. There's only Native Americans, not the only people. who use astrology. I mean, astrology goes back thousands of years.
Astrology is not even fucking indigenous to this,
right? Exactly. These
continents, man. It's like Sumerian or some shit back in the day. Yeah. But yeah, it's just, I mean, I think the idea was that I was saying that, like, I don't personally subscribe to spiritual ideas, or like I have some of my own, you know, but I don't necessarily believe anything that anyone says just because they say it, right? And like, that's what I was kind of getting at. And I was like, yeah, like, you know, astrology is kind of like woo woo, like nonsense or whatever. And this guy was like, you know,
and then he snatched your dream catcher right off the wall. Bless you,
your dream catcher, your Coachella crown,
your Coachella flower crown, and your dream catcher. You just snatched it off the wall.
Hey man, my great grandmother was Cree, so I'm pretty sure that means I'm allowed.
And then you snatched it back. You're like, ah ah ah.
You have to bring her with you.
Yeah. True.
It's proof.
True.
Yep.
Someone said they stole all your crystals. You know, we hear enough about black girl magic. We don't talk enough about white girl magic.
A big butt is now. A white girl.
That's the magic.
To you it is.
Yo, it's funny you say that though, eh? Because like there was also a huge rise in rhetoric around witchcraft that kind of coincided with a lot of this, well, with a lot of the identitarian turn. It's like people trying to find ways to think of themselves that, because we're all sort of fucking like extremely alienated and like don't know how to change anything. We feel powerless, you know, and people are looking for ways to feel like they have some sort of belonging in the world and also some way to influence the world, you know. And so that's why, I mean, it's one of the reasons why like every fucking like white girl on Instagram has like a list of sort of like the diseases that she has and like, you know, her fucking bra size and whatever, you know. Like it's like I joke about it being like I feel like people are gonna start like listing their like breed soon, like a dog, you know. But yeah, and there and everyone was a witch for like from like 2019 to 2021 or so.
That's true, with the pussy hats and all of that.
I don't know if the pussy hats were really the same crowd, but you know, I knew a lot of like punk girls with like, you know, fucking ripped tights and silver jewelry who were like, I'm a witch, you know? And it's like, it, you know, actually to a certain degree, I think if you're not being annoying about it, it's kind of like an interesting thing to explore. Just like the idea of sort of like European spiritual practices from like pre-capitalist ones, basically.
I mean,
but
these are not people who got like addicted to like late 1960s bewitched TV televisions, like, and
no, these aren't those wigglers.
They call themselves witches.
It's more like it's people who read a lot of like Sylvia Federici and really went with it.
You know, some Sylvia Federici was my undergrad history teacher.
Oh fuck. Right on, man.
I had her as a teacher. She wrote one of my recommendations for law school.
Hell yeah. Cool.
Amazing.
She also wiggled her nose at him. That's how I graduated.
Amazing woman.
Awesome. Yeah. I would love to meet Sylvia Federici. Is she still around?
I do believe she's still around. She retired from teaching. I would love to get her as a guest on the show.
Are you going to yell at her, Jay, and be like, look what you did?
You ruined my dating pool.
You ruined my whole dating pool. Think I want all these goddamn dream catchers and crystals in the house? I'm allergic to cats.
Oh man.
No, that's not what you would say.
Probably not. I would say it's very nice to meet you. Yeah. Read your books.
I'll start there. And then slowly we'll get to my rage at the Montreal witch culture.
Yeah.
Pascal Robert, do you have some closing questions before we go? We're coming up on the hour.
I'm watching the timeline talking about Silvia Federici. I was like, it's kind of funny, the comments back and forth. But what exactly is the reaction you're trying to stir up with this, Jay? What are you trying to get people to really understand about the problems in which we essentialize whiteness?
I think I've identified that there are like many, many people out there who are really deeply unsatisfied with the rhetoric around race that they have access to. I think a lot of people feel like they're supposed to be sort of one of these kind of like cringing liberals about it, or like some kind of reactionary conservative. But like a lot of people, I think, just want to be like normal. They just want to be like, fuck, this is all so weird and stupid. And like, I just want to like get along with people and so on. But I don't have like a way to talk about it in this atmosphere that is so like fraught, you know? And so like, I think a lot of middle of the road centrists would be like, we need to have like a racial conversation or whatever. And I'm like, no, we need to understand like what race is, you know, or more accurately, like what it isn't and where it came from and like what it's doing, you know? And I think that we also need to understand that, honestly, like my big thing that I just really want to fucking get through to people is that white people are not special. I am really sick of it. I'm super tired of it. White people don't have like a special essential spark of genius that makes them invent things and conquer the world. They also don't have a super special spark of evil that makes them these like cruel and ravenous monsters. You know, white people don't exist. Actually, there's just people, and there are people who have been assigned that categorization and grow up within it. And in that sense, that's real, you know. But when you like walk, when you take like enough steps back, and you look at how history panned out, there are like very specific and intelligible reasons why certain groups at certain points in history experienced these massive expansions in their power. And when that happened, they almost always had some sort of ethnic cohesion around that power, ethnogenesis, people coming to understand themselves in a certain way as being part of a certain group. And in my article, I go through a number of them, just trying to get through to people that like very often in history, there is some sort of technological innovation that takes place in one corner of the world. And when it does, the people who have access to it are able to expand their power, you know? And if they don't, very often someone else will, right? And that, again, is not to say that it's like, you know, morally neutral when this happens, right? But it is important to understand why it happens when it does, right? And I don't even use this term in my article, but the entire basis for this, everything that I'm saying and everything that I wrote in that article, is historical materialism, which is, as you guys know, the one of the most important interventions into the study of history that Karl Marx made. And, you know, prior to Karl Marx, people basically thought that history happened because either God made it happen or because a series of great men made important decisions, right? And Karl Marx was like, well, actually, it's the fucking economy, you know? It's the way that people produce the things that they need that influences their culture. And the two exist in this dialectical relationship, and we can study it and we can understand why it happens, you know? And I just want people to have access to that, that understanding of history, that understanding of race. I want them to be able to talk about it. I want them to have the examples in their head so that when people are sort of spouting this insane, like racial essentialist gibberish, they can be like, well, actually, I don't know. I heard this kind of different way of thinking about it. And I want people to, yeah, just have more access to that way of thinking about it. I think it's fucking important because we've been like really, really fed this this racialist message for like a long time. And people are hungry for a different way of looking at it, you know. And I don't want them to only have access to that or like fascist reaction. So yeah.
Excellent.
Well, thank you very much, Jay. Le soleil, le soleil.
It's not that fucking hard, man. It's like le soleil.
Le soleil. You don't understand. First of all, goddammit, we didn't have a phone conversation or anything beforehand, so I didn't get a chance to. How do I say your last name? And I thought I could say it all right. And then I started reading it, just effing it up.
I feel like soleil is one of the like one French words that most people would know.
No? Sunshine, man.
Yeah, it means sun.
Oh, that's what you get for assuming. Look, I am the real black person here. These are Haitians on the screen.
If you can say De La Soul, you can say
yeah, there you go. Exactly.
You can say Beyonce.
See how mad the Haitians get?
Yo, the Haitians thing is interesting. I guess we're supposed to stop talking now, but yeah, you know,
you wanna,
I don't know.
You want to racially essentialize Haitians in the
show? There's a lot of Haitians. We can't just
leave that hanging.
I want to racially essentialize some Haitians.
Do we want to save this for the champagne room, guys, or do we want to do this on the main hour?
For the champagne.
You can't. We're gonna push your racially essentializing Haitians. Well, I got something to say about Haitians. Like, I don't mind a lot of races, but when you guys come over here, just litter everywhere. Taking all the white empaths.
It's true.
That's his real problem with Haitians.
Taking all the white empaths.
Taking all the white
empaths. Everywhere.
Look. There, wherever you are watching or listening to the show, there's links in the description to the website. Also, to Jay's podcast. Jay, do you want to shout out the podcast? When I asked you, we talked about going on each other's shows. I was like, oh, when do you guys record? You're like, hey, bro. When we get together is when we do it.
Yeah, we don't do a live. I didn't even realize you guys were doing a live because I've only ever seen your show on on YouTube. You know, that's why I was like waiting for you in Google Meets like an idiot.
My bad.
That's but yeah, fault. we just do it whenever we fucking feel like it, man.
Well, hopefully you guys get the urge coming up soon. I would love to be on there.
Yeah, hell yeah. We got a couple of things lined up, but when they're done, I'm gonna hit you up.
For sure. Jay, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Jay Le Soleil. We will be going to the champagne room. Jay, I'm gonna email you a link to the champagne room. Jay is gonna talk more about his beef with Haitian Canadians. I definitely have some videos that we have to break down with Pascal and Toussaint.
My God.
You didn't watch any of the videos I sent you?
I didn't watch a single one of them. It's going to be fresh and new to me, too.
I love it when you don't watch the videos. There's nothing funnier than when you haven't watched the videos and then we show them to Pascal. I did. Okay. Go to the champagne room. Also, tomorrow, the Mau Mau Hour. Pascal, tell them what's going on in the Mau Mau Hour.
Dr. Cornel West is going to talk about his running for president and the Green Party ticket with me on the Mau Mau Hour. This is Revolution Podcast. Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the Patreon section first, and then live to be streamed at within the 9 p.m. hour.
Eastern Time.
Eastern Standard Time.
Eastern Time. All right, everybody. And we are
out.